Gemara starts off, Yomar Hashem Moshe. So Hashem said to Moshe, Emor al Kohanim ben Aaron, say to the Kohanim, the sons of Aaron, v'amar to them, you should say to them the following, v'nefesh lo yitam v'amov. Three times in the pasuk it used the word Vayomer. Vayomar Hashem Moshe, Emor al Kohanim, v'amar to aleihem. The Amartalem. So what's with the three times this Amor? Oh, so I did speak about this last year, but I'm saying something a little bit different. Ramosha said the following. By almost all dinim and halachos written in the Torah, the word Vayidaber appears. The word Vayidaber Hashem Moshe. Even in Sefer Yoshua, when the psukim start going into different things by Yoshua, Yoshua gets up to Yoshua ben Nun and he starts speaking about the Ari Mikva. He says, Vayidaber Hashem lo Yoshua Lamor. Unlike any other place in Yoshua, which is Vayomer Hashem Yoshua, whatever it is, one time it says Vayidaber, and the Gemara asks, it's a Gemara in Erechin. Why did it say the word Vayidaber? Because it's Divrei Torah. Divrei Torah deserves a harsher lashon of Vayidaber because it needs something like that. So the question is, why over here by the halachas of Kohanim, when you go into Kohen Hedyot and Kohen Gadol, why over here does it start off with Vayomer? It should say Vayidaber. That's where Moshe finds his question.
Vayomer is a softer lashon?
It's a softer lashon. Vayidaber is kasha kegivin, and Vayomer is supposed to be a lashon raka.
The question is, why do you do all these laws in soft ways?
100%. If it's a real law, then why does it switch it off that it's like this? So Kohanim have a specific job in Klal Yisrael. Their bracha was part of all Shevet Levi by Yaakov, but the bracha was Yoru Mishpatecho Yaakov LeYisrael. Yoru Mishpatecho Yaakov Mishpatecho LeYisrael. That's how it is. Yoru, I'm saying the words wrong. I forgot what it is. Whatever it is. Yoru Mishpatecho Yaakov. So it should teach it over to Yaakov. And they're chayiv to be able to teach everyone. More so than all of Shevet Levi. Kohanim are supposed to be the guys that everybody looks up to. Everybody looks at the Kohanim and they say, wow, look at what those guys do. That's a lot of pressure on them. They have to always be on. 24-7, they got to be those people that whenever somebody is looking at them, they're causing a kiddush Hashem and they're making sure that everything's going to be done the right way.
But
they're with the people the rest of the year. I mean, they don't just hide in a box and like all of a sudden once a year they come out like, hey, I'm here. I'm not going. They're around people the rest of the year. They're the guys. They're the guys in Shul. Yes.
That's crazy.
Anyway, they have a lot of pressure on themselves to be who they're supposed to be. It's one thing to make yourself that way after years of growth. Meaning to become that big Rav and that big, you know, Rosh Hashiva and whatever it is. To be that guy that everybody's looking up to and build yourself up that way, that's one thing. But to be a guy that way from birth, you have no choice. You must be a tzaddik. And you don't have any choice. Everyone's looking up at you. It's really hard. It's hard to be the rabbi's kid. You know, the rabbi's kid, when everybody's looking at the rabbi and they're saying, well, if the rabbi's that way, then his kid should probably be the same way. It's really hard to be that way. Therefore, we tell them that we have to, you guys have to chill out of it. Don't treat this as if, like, if you don't do this, you're going to die. Don't treat it that way. Don't be so crazy. It shouldn't be looked at as a burden, but a pleasure. And actually, and it's something that, wow, you guys got the ability, the privilege, to be able to work as a Kohen in the base of Mikdash. That's how the Kohanim themselves have to look at it. And that's why it's Vayomer. It's not Vayidaber. Tell this to the Kohanim, and if they don't do it, they're going to die. Don't say that to them. Say to the Kohanim and explain to them what a privilege they get, and if they don't.
Life, so they're given Meiser, they're given the food, they're given everything, they're given the homes.
To be on all the time when you didn't choose it is not the best. Granted, for me to say, wow, I would love to live that life.
Right.
For me to say that, I would love to live that life as a Kohen and get everything or whatever it is, that's one thing. To be born into it is yet another thing altogether. For me to choose it is very different from being born into it and doing it. And that's what I say by Yomer. Tell them, I understand, you know what? Sometimes it might look like a burden that you always have to be in the basement because you have to work barefoot, that you have to wear that shirt, that you have to go once a year and do all this stuff. I hear you. I hear how bad that is for you. But Lamaisa, it could be something great for you. It's something that might be tremendous for you. And that very easily answers the whole Emor V'amarta. Emor V'amarta says Rashi Lahazar Gedolim Ala Ketanim, to tell the older Kohanim to warn the Ketanim what they have to do, to tell the younger people what to do. Here's the pshat, because the Ketanim see it as a chiyuv. The Ketanim see it as a chov that they have to do it. And if they don't do it, they're going to be beaten. Then the kids will just rebel. Every kid rebels.
Neshama than we do. Like, for example, they said Mil Hashem Elai, right?
Yeah.
And the reason why we're greater than non-Jews is because our ancestors
chose
as an Atzma Nishma, right? So the same way that they said Mil Hashem Elai,
they have an inherent Kedusha. Right. I don't know about the Neshama, but they have an inherent Kedusha.
Do they have a greater Neshama than we do?
B'Kedusha So Shal Aron is all we know. They make Birchas Kohen, B'Kedusha So Shal Aron. They have something different. They're inherently more Kadosh, but we don't know anything more than that. I don't know. I don't know if it gets any even more than that, but that is one part of it. They see it if they see it as a privilege, the Kohanim will take it in such a good way, and it can be something tremendous. But it's got to be something that they choose to do, and not something that they're forced into. That's the concept behind it. That's the type of chinuch that anybody should have. Whenever you become, whether it's a daddy or a rabbi, or just some a person that goes up to other people and tells them what a person has to do, you're working with a person who's just become from. You can't tell them that it's so hard and it's so difficult and whatever it is. That can't be how it's done. It's got to be that you go up to them and you explain why this life is worth it. Why this life is worth doing something. It's so important to do a besimcha. And we spoke last year about Reb Moshe's famous mitzvah with all the people that were growing up around him in New York, how all their kids weren't keeping Shabbos. Their fathers sacrificed time after time again. They would get fired every Friday night. Every Friday night they were fired because they wouldn't come in on Saturday morning because they kept Shabbos. And their kids didn't keep Shabbos. So Reb Moshe said, it depends. If they went in and they said to themselves, if they went into Shabbos, they went into Shabbos and they said, oy, it's so hard to be a Jew. Those kids didn't remain from. If they went into Shabbos and said, Baruch Hashem, I have the ability to keep Shabbos. Okay, I lost my job. It's worth it for Shabbos. Those kids remained from. It depended on how they went about doing it. That was the famous Reb Moshe. That's what we spoke about last time.
How do you do?
That's the worst thing to say.
Right. What's the saying?
Rebel Yashiv says that is the connection between this part of the Parsha and the end of the Parsha.
What's the Yiddish saying that everyone loves their children and told their children in that?
I have no idea.
Hey, you heard of the
code story? I know.
I don't remember the phrase.
Shverazaniyid. Yeah. Rebbe Yashiv says the connection between the beginning of the Parsha and the end of the Parsha is now obvious. The end of the Parsha talks about Mekalel, the Megadeth, the guy who cursed out HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Here's what Rebbe Yashiv explains. Talmai, the king of Greece, I don't know exactly which one he was, told 72 Zekanim, the Egyptian king, took 72 Zekanim and had them translate the Torah into what we know now as the Septuagint. Translated into it. One of the changes made was in Parshas Mishpatim. Chav Dalet Hey. It says, Vayishlach es Narei B'nei Yisrael Vayalu Olos. He sent out the Na'arim, the young men of B'nei Yisrael, and they brought up Olos in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They changed the word Na'arim into the word Za'atuti, Choshiva people, instead of the word Na'are. Talmai couldn't fathom that young people were being makriv korbanos. That's the elder's job. The elders are the leaders. They're the ones who have to do it, not the young people. Who are these young people that are being makriv? What are they doing? So they changed Zatute. So they changed the word to fit his connotation, his explanation of the pasuk. But the pasuk has a pshat. What's the pshat behind the pasuk? Why does it say the word Na'arei B'nei Yisrael? The answer is because the Kiyum HaTorah is through the Na'arim, through the Tinokos Shel Beis Rabban, through the young people who are going into the next generation, who are able to do, they take the Mesorah down and bring it to the next generation. That's why there's Kruvim on the Aron Kodesh. The Kruvim look like little kids, because the importance is not just you keeping the Torah, but to pass it down so that it keeps going further and further through the Mesorah from one person to the other. That's the concept. When people are given the wrong hashkafos, when they're taught Torah from the Ish Mitzri, who, although through the Medrash we know was killed by Moshe Rabbeinu, but in Pshat, if you just look at Pshat in the Pasuk, it seems that this Ben Ish Mitzri was an Ish Mitzri that converted. He might have been one of the Erev Rav's kids. In Pshat, not in Medrash, but in Pshat, one of the Erev Rav had a kid with a Bas Yisrael. He married a Bas Yisrael that had a kid, and he gave him his own hashkafos. You know, who cares? It's just a mitzvah. It's not that big of a deal. That's what you get. You have that type of hashkaf. You have a megadeth. Lahazir gedolam altan. In Pshat, who was the Ish Mitzri? The Ish Mitzri was just an Egyptian guy that married a Jewish girl. A ger. A regular ger that married a Jewish girl who was there by Har Sinai and whatever it was. But he didn't have the same chashivas for Torah that B'nai Yisrael had. And that guy taught his kids something different. That came out with the megadeth. The beginning of the parsha talks about how to teach your kids. If you do it long way, you come out with the Megadeth at the very, very end.
It's Mitzri, not a Jew.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Meaning, it was hashkafically in Ish Mitzri, but he happened to be someone who was a ger. It could even be that people weren't positive that this kid was off. But Lamafreya, when they saw what he did, they realized that they had made the right decision. They didn't want him to be in a certain camp. They looked at him and said, you don't belong here. You don't belong in this camp. And they weren't positive. There was just something off about him. They looked at him and said, there's something off about this kid. I don't want this. I said, not in Medrash and Pshat. They looked at it and they said, there's something wrong with this kid. There's something about this. But once they saw what he complained about, complaining about the lechem upon him, complaining about that the bread and calling it stale, they realized, what in the world is he talking about? We said a Reb Schwab before, but it's such an obvious line. It's a pasuk in Micha. Yisharim Darkei Hashem. The ways of God are straight. Sadikim Yehubam. tzaddikim are able to go in the ways of the Torah, and they only go further and further up. Uposhim yakash lubam. And the sinners, they trip up on all these steps, and the sinners trip up. The lechem apanim, if you looked at it, and you said to yourself, it's 9-day-old bread. That's moldy, disgusting bread that you're serving to the Kohanim. Then it looked moldy to you. It looked like it was moldy to you. But if you looked at it and said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving this bread, there's no way it would be moldy, you'd see it as the reality is that it was fresh bread that the Kohanim were eating, and they tasted something that was Me'ein Olam Haba. It depended on how you looked at it. The Ish Mitzri looked at the bread and he said, that's disgusting. That's absolutely disgusting. I don't want to go anywhere near such a thing. That's what he was complaining about. And the people looked at him and said, what, are you crazy? That's the most delicious bread we've ever seen. That's the greatest thing we've ever seen. It was two totally different hashkafos. And the Ben Ish Mitzri looked at everything the opposite that the rest of Bnei Yisrael did. Bnei Yisrael saw this unbelievable bread, the truth. And the Ben Ish Mitzri looked at it, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed him to see what he saw. La'asid Lavo, and this is my own little addition, but this is an obvious type of idea. The Makos come back. Kriyas Yamsuf happens again. Who knows? Who knows? If you sit there and you say to yourself, there's no way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing any miracles, maybe you miss everything. You won't see the Malachim doing the Makos. You'll miss Kriyas Yamsuf completely. There'll be a huge Kriyas Yamsuf. And a guy will wake up in the morning and go, so what happened? He's like, are you choking? You missed that? How did you miss that? The same way Chazal tell us that Erev Rav missed Matan Torah. They stayed up all night with Bnei Yisrael. They were up all night waiting for the Torah to happen. And with Bnei Yisrael, when Bnei Yisrael went to sleep early, they went to sleep early because they wanted to make sure that they were awake. They thought that Matan Torah was going to be in a dream. So they went to sleep early in the morning. The Erev Rav slept right through it. Slept right through Matan Torah. And Bnei Yisrael, they were the ones who got up with the lightning and the thunder. So they got up at 12, 1 o'clock p.m. They're just like, so what's going on? So, okay, you joking? We just had Matan Torah. You missed that whole thing? And everybody was just like, oh no. You're joking. We missed everything? That's the concept that people, who says that everybody's going to be Zocha to see it? Who says that everyone's going to see every mock and see it as something? Who knows what it's going to be exactly? There's a crazy Chassam Sofer about the Megadeth, about the Mekalo that everyone must know. Now we're switching back to Medrash. Let's go into this Megadeth, the little Mekalo. I'm going to ask, the Megadeth Mekalo. Megadeth is a curse. Mekalo means literally curse. Megadeth means to say bad things. They both mean the same thing. He's called the blasphemer. Yeah, there you go. Megadeth is the word in the pasuk. He's known as Mekalo throughout the Rishonim.
I just wanted to point out that something that backs you up. You know, in actual science, you know this, in quantum physics, we know that if you look at something, you observe it, it changes. It changes.
Yeah. Observation.
Right. So the actual reading. So right. You see that.
That's the concept.
You know, spirituality.
That's understanding the concept. You have something that's there.
It can change.
Yeah. Well, made by a Jew. So, you know, quantum physics.
It's interesting.
Last time I went through quantum physics, though, I didn't fully understand it.
I just know that whole thing.
You just got that one liner. That's how you started off. You read the first line of the book. Six questions on the Mekalo. At the very end of the parsha, I'm going to read you a little bit of it. We're not going to be able to read all of it, but in the very beginning of the parsha, it says, by Yetzei ben Isha Yisraeli, a son of a Jewish woman went out. V'u ben Ish Mitzri, who is the son of an Egyptian man. B'soch ben Yisrael, he went among ben Yisrael. V'yinatzu b'machane, and he fought in the camp. Ben Yisraeli, the Isha Yisraeli, the son of the Jewish woman, and another Jewish guy. V'yikob ben Isha Yisraeli, says Hashem, he cursed the name of God. V'yikalel, and he cursed it. I don't know the difference between by Yaakov and by Yikalel. By Avihu Osoal Moshe, they brought him to Moshe. The Shem Imo, in the name of his mother, was Shlomis Bat Divri Lamati Don. In the end, he went into Mishmor. He went into this jail cell, so to speak, to wait to see what would happen. Moshe Benu said, take him out. Hotzis Makol Nichus Amachme. The Stone Kul Kol Hashem Yisidei Marosh of Rogmo Sokol Aida, and they were going to stone him. That's ended up happening with Makal and Megadeth. Okay. Yes. And he was killed. He was stoned. Six questions. Number one, says by Yetze, and he went out. Where did he come out from? Rashi says three different perushim. One of them is Vayetze Mibazdin Shalmosha. Mibazdin Shalmosha. What is it? Bazdin Shalmosha? When did Moshe have a Bazdin? Moshe did everything on his own. There's no Bazdin. Who's on his Bazdin? Yeah, he instituted Bazdins for everybody else, but there were Bati Dinin. But Moshe Rabbeinu was the other guy who was just there. If everything went to the Bazdin and it didn't go through, then they went to Moshe Rabbeinu. There's no Bazdin of Moshe. Moshe was his own. There's no such thing as a Bazdin. Number two, he left Vayetze and then Vayinatsu. He went out from the Bazdin and then he started the fight. How does that make sense? Wouldn't you start a fight and then you go to Beis Din and then you leave the Beis Din? It should be the opposite order. It's the wrong order over here. That's number two. Number three, what does Bisok B'nai Yisrael mean? He was walking amongst, he went out from among B'nai Yisrael. What in the world does that mean? Number four, Rashi says he was a ger. Rashi quotes he was a ger. But his mother was Jewish. If his mother was Jewish, there's no way he could be a ger. How is he considered a ger? Number five, how in the world do we know, and this is the pell of a question, how do you know that he was the son of an Egyptian man? How in the world? The Medrash says that Dasan's wife, who was Dasan Aviram, Dasan's wife was Shlomis Bas Divri. Shlomis Bas Divri, and this is brought down by Rashi, Shlomis Bas Divri used to say hello to everybody, a cheerful face for everybody. As the Ish Mitzri called Dasan to work one day, she came to the door and she said hello. The Egyptian took that as a line of a comeuppance, so of a come on line, so to speak. So he came back that night when it was dark and she couldn't see, and he slept with her. And then afterward, Dasan came back. She said, "What in the world is going on? You were just with me." And he realized that it was the Egyptian man. He approaches the Egyptian man, and the Egyptian man says, he starts beating him, and that's when Moshe Rabbeinu came along. That's what we know. Moshe Rabbeinu came along, saw what had happened, saw the entire thing, and killed the Ish Mitzri. Okay, how in the world do you assume that the child was from the Ish Mitzri? Maybe it's from Dasan. Rov be'ilos kol kanach rabal. Fine, but how do the Jews know? Most times, you go after the husband. I don't care if the kid looked Egyptian. The halacha is that if you have a person who slept with one person once, you don't automatically assume that the kid is a mamzer. You never do that. Even if the kid... I'm sorry?
No,
you'd have to say that was specifically at that time. How do you know that Gzera was exactly at that time?
Well, maybe that
Moshe Rabbeinu was already Moshe Rabbeinu was already 18. That's way after the Gzera. It's way after the Gzera. The Gzera is already done. Yeah, it was made then. It stopped. It's a Gemara and Sota.
This is one.
The Medrash says it happened once. Again, the Medrash says it happened once.
I'm not trying to be crude, but I don't understand how that happens. It doesn't make a difference.
It's not something we're dealing
with. I don't get it. I just don't understand.
Doesn't make a difference how. It doesn't, really couldn't care less. At the end of the day, maybe Shlomo's back to everyone. Maybe she was a Zona. Regardless, the son would not automatically be an Ish Mitzri. It doesn't make a difference. But that's not how we paskin. So what in the world are we doing? Why are we paskin that he's a Ben Ish Mitzri? Why is the pasuk calling him a Ben Ish Mitzri? Even if the Torah knows. The people didn't know that. So why in the world are we calling him that as if everybody knew it? That's the big question from the Chassam Sofer. And then number six, what does all this have to do with the Lechem Aponim? Where in the world is the Lechem Aponim in this that he started complaining about the Lechem Aponim and said it was stale? What's going on here? So the Chassam Sofer says an unreal part. He says it in two different places. One is in the Chassam Sofer Ala Torah, in the back of the Sefer, from the notes of Reb Fishel Sofer that he used to take every Friday from his father's grandson at his grandfather's shir. So that's number one. That's one place he has it. And there's another place in the Torah's Moshe. He writes it in the Torah's Moshe itself. And he says the following. In the original Pasuk, when Moshe Rabbeinu saw the Ish Mitzri beating Dasan, it says, Vayifen ko vako. He turned this way and that, Vayar kien ish. And he saw that there was no one there. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu did. Turned this way and that, and he saw there was no one there. Says Rashi says, Ra'a ma'asolo bebayis. Moshe Rabbeinu saw what the Ish Mitzri did to Dasan's wife in the house. That this guy, this Ish Mitzri, was together with Shlomis Bas Divri. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu saw with Ruach HaKodesh. When people went up to him afterward and said to him, "You killed an Ish Mitzri? Why did you do that?" He told them, because he raped a Bas Yisrael and he caused her to become pregnant with his child. Moshe Rabbeinu saw it in Ruach HaKodesh and he said it out that this child, the child that's now in Shlomis Bas Divri's stomach, is the Egyptian's child through his Ruach HaKodesh. Nobody else could have said this except for Moshe Rabbeinu because he impregnated her. No.
But she was married, so she's that's
normally. Gilead Rais is high.
Gilead Rais is one of those that has been up.
What?
He
is killed. I could care less about her. He is killed because of Gilead Rais. That's all you need. She can claim rape. Let her do whatever she wants. Again, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what Shlomo's Bas Divri is. It's not part of what Chazal matter within this case. We're dealing with the son. The child is only known as being the son of the Ish Mitzri because Moshe Rabbeinu announced it. He said out loud to his Ruach HaKodesh, she was raped and she was impregnated.
That's just as
normally,
saying that
normally an Eid Echad is isn't enough to give anyone malchus. An eid echod is ein eid echod neman b'yisurin by normal cases of a piece of meat or whatever. However, there is a specific halacha. It's mentioned in Hilchos Sanhedrin, Perek Tazayim Halacha Vav in the Rambam. It says that if an eid says a piece of meat is usur, one aid comes along and says the piece of meat is usur. It had a chazakah of kashrus before that. Everybody assumed it was kosher. One aid comes along and says that piece is usur. And a guy picks it up and he eats it. The guy is over on eating something that is treif. He is chayiv for eating that piece. Why? Says the Rambam, it's called an aid echad and a chazakah. Once a chazakah, that people think that it's a piece of treif meat, because one guy's going around telling everybody it's treif. Once a chazakah is there, and people are there, because people look at it and say, oh, you mean that treif piece of meat? People start talking about it and say, that's a treif piece of meat, that makes it treif in our eyes. Again, I'm quoting a Rambam, you can check it up yourself. But that's the halacha regarding this, and that's called, even though an eid echod is not normally neman, an eid echod shelo b'shas maisa, meaning not passing at the time, the guy is a piece of meat, and he's about to put it in his mouth, you say, wait, that might be treif. It means nothing. Even if he says, that is treif, it means nothing. But if he said it beforehand, he said, that's treif. And then 10 minutes later, a guy comes along, and everybody thinks it's treif, and he picks it up and he wants to eat it, that chazakah with the eid echod is neman, to the point where he now is going to be chayef. This child was muchzuk among Bnei Yisrael because of Moshe Rabbeinu's Eidus Echod. He said beforehand that through his Ruach HaKodesh that Shlomis's kid was a Ben Ish Mitzri. He had a chazaka on him that he was a Ben Ish Mitzri. Thus, he was a Ben Ish Mitzri besoch Bnei Yisrael. Among Bnei Yisrael, they all considered him to be a Ben Ish Mitzri because they knew that from Moshe Rabbeinu. They had the chazaka from Moshe Rabbeinu.
There's a difference between Moshe Rabbeinu and the piece of meat. If I say this piece of meat is not kosher, it's because I was an aide. I know this piece of meat is not kosher. It came from a not kosher animal or whatever it was. Moshe Rabbeinu only was made through Ruach HaKodesh, according to this. But you can't made on something through Ruach HaKodesh.
You can't do halacha. You can't do halacha regarding Ruach HaKodesh. He wasn't paskening. He was telling them why he killed the Ish Mitzri. That's all he had done. Through his testimony of why he killed the Ish Mitzri, he added on, by the way, the child is going to be the Ben Ish Mitzri.
Hakin and Deborah. Do we take him for his
work? What the heck? No. Don't even bring up Hakin and Deborah here.
But I don't understand how you're getting.
Again, it's an aid echod. It's an eid echod. You have one eidus. He knows. And it's 100% because it's through Ruach HaKodesh. It's 100% he knows. And there's a chazaka because of that.
But there's no eid echod by Yichusin. You can't. How do you get one eid make somebody a mom?
You wouldn't unless you have a chazaka. If it comes up to a person getting married and one eid runs up and he says the kid's a momser, you don't listen to him. But if one eid does it before the maisa, way beforehand, that's based on Beis Din. Beis Din decides it based on what comes up in the time.
The people's perception is what's kind of supporting it. If there's one aid, and the people's perception supports that, and that's what
Yes, that's it. That's the concept. That's where it comes from. That's the concept of chazaka based on that Eidus Echod. If that chazaka is taken seriously, which it did among Bnei Yisrael, then all of a sudden something happens. So someone took this guy to court. Why did he take him to court? It could be that somebody died. Somebody died at some point, some relative, and he wanted to split the inheritance, let's say, with his brother. That's what the Chacham Sofer brings down. He wanted to split it with his brother, an Ish Yisraeli, and the Ben Isha Yisraelis. They wanted to split the inheritance. So comes along the Ish Yisrael, and he comes along and he says to everybody, guess what? I'm the only son of that guy, or I'm the only brother of that guy, or whatever it is, whatever was happening. And this guy, the Ben Ish Mitzri, got up and he said, I'm also a brother. They said, no, you're not. You're a Ben Ish Mitzri. He said, oh yeah? Prove it to me. Prove that I'm the son of the Ish Mitzri. They brought it to the Beis Din, and the Beis Din, based on Moshe's original testimony and the chazaka thereof, said, you have to assume that you're a Ben Ish Mitzri. There's no choice. We have to assume that way and that Nepaskin through the chazaka set up by Moshe Rabbeinu, then he can't collect anything. That's what happened to Ben Ish Mitzri. In Parshas Pinchas, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put his name of Yud Hei among all the Shvatim. Every Shevet, HaChanochi, HaPalui, Hei and Yud, all over. To say my name is on them, to say that they weren't soiled by the Egyptians. There's pure Jewish lineage going all the way through. No Egyptian blood through any of them. They're all Jewish all the way through. They're all fully Jewish. The Ben Ish Mitzri knew that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was putting a stamp on all Bnei Yisrael and saying they're all Jewish. And he said, well, look at me. If I'm not, If I'm not the guy, then Mistoma, there are other people here. There are other people here that were also raped by an Egyptian, and Moshe Rabbeinu just didn't talk about them. And if Moshe Rabbeinu didn't talk about them, there probably are other people here. So he got up and he said, curse that name of God. He cursed the shame Havaya that they were using to show that Bnei Yisrael were clean lineage all the way through. And he said, you see that it's not true by me, so it's probably not true by anybody else as well. That was the curse that he ended up doing. There's more Mamzerim here, and it was Kofer Be'ikr, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was putting his name, and he was lying about the fact that there were no other Egyptian blood throughout Enigar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, however, knew that this guy was going to do what he did. He knows the future. This guy was going to be Chayav Misa, and that he was the only puzzle guy throughout all of Klal Yisrael, and because he would be gone, then at the end of the day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can put his name on everybody. Why? Because there is only Jewish lineage. You have this guy died. This guy's gone. That means there's nobody else left. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu saw through Ruach HaKodesh. Vayar kienish osid latzeis mimenu sheyiz gayer. He saw that the Ish Mitzri was going to have no kids at all that were going to survive. Because even though there was going to be the Ben Ish Mitzri, there was going to be that one guy that's right over here, he knew he was going to die through his Ruach HaKodesh. He knew that there was nothing that was going to happen from this kid. So granted, that's the reason why. The Lechem Apanim represents our tremendous relationship and our connection with God. The Mekowel thought, God's not really with us. There's no connection between us and God. God doesn't really care. And God puts his name on us, but he doesn't really mean it. There's so many other psulim between us. God wouldn't have anything to do with us. God doesn't want to have anything to do with a bunch of mamzerim. To which HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you're wrong. I do have a connection with you. You're all pure lineage. The only one who's messed up is you. The only one who's messed up is from Shlomo Yisrael Sivri, and that's you. You're the only one that is nothing else other way. And that was the line that you're dead wrong in the way you're thinking, the way you're going. That's the line from the Chassam Sofer. Crazy line on what was going on. That should answer up all the questions. The Ishbitzer. This is pretty scary. I don't know if you know the Me'ashiloach. The Ishbitzer is a scary safer to read. He's more of a psychologist than he is a Hasidic rabbi. You don't get much more than that. He puts down that if you look through Emor, there are five parshios that lead up to the parshios all about the holidays. Five parshios about the holidays. How many holidays are mentioned over here? Five of them. Pesach, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot are the five holidays mentioned. He says the five parshios connect with the holidays. And you got to hear how. I mean, it's unbelievable. He says these five parshios represent the five complaints that every person has when they go through life, that they have with the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that are very difficult to answer. And the five Moad and the five holidays answer up those problems for us. They're going to answer everything. So listen to this. First Parsha is Tumas Meis by a Kohen. A Kohen is a special level. He's not allowed to be Metame Meis. Your first question is, why does God let death happen? Why in the world would God, what is the purpose of death in this world? In other words, why do bad things happen to good people? Why is that happening to good people? Why would you allow death?
Bad thing. I mean, it's not good. I mean, like, that's not bad things to good people. Like, everyone, meaning, that's the end of it. That's not.
Why do good people die earlier?
That's
what they're asking. They're asking that question. What is with the Tumas Meis? That's what the coin is representing. That's the first parsha. The first question that people ask. What's going on? Why do bad things happen to good people? Why are these people dying? Number two. Second parsha goes into the Kohanim having Mumin. Different types of blemishes that they can no longer serve in the Beis Hamikdash because they have this mum. Why did God make this guy a baal mum so that he can't serve in the Beis Hamikdash? If he's kadosh enough to eat the meat in the Beis Hamikdash, he's not kadosh enough to serve. Why did God do this? Meaning, number two, why was I born with inherent problems that I can never get rid of? Why wasn't I just born perfect? Why wasn't I born with a drive, a desire to succeed, to do good, and with all good things? Why did I have to be born with issues, with problems, with other things out there? Of course, I'm talking about everybody else, not myself. But everybody else who was born with inherent problems. Why would somebody be born that way? Why is that true? It's a joke. Number three, the third parsha talks about the whole concept of Tumas Nefesh. Tummy, if you go inside the same room as a dead body, you become Tummy, and all the different things with Tumas Nefesh. Kwanim used to spend so much time making sure that they weren't Tummy. They didn't touch anything Tummy. They didn't have anything happen. So when he does become Tummy, his immediate reaction is, God, why do you let that happen? Why in the world did you make me become Tommy? Number three, can't God stop me from doing something wrong before I do it? Why doesn't God just make something happen so that I don't sin? Every time I'm about to sin, God should just put a brick wall in front of me and say, don't do it. Why does he let me go ahead and sin? Just stop me before I do it in the first place. Number four, the korbanos that we bring have psuin as well. If there's something wrong with them, we're not allowed to bring them. So your question is, why would God allow my animal that I wanted to give to him? Why would he allow it to be blemished? Why not? It's an animal that I wanted to give him. I didn't want it for myself. Why have it blemished? Why would God let it be blemished? Number four, why leave my property alone, God? Why can't you just leave my property alone? Why am I losing money? In other words, yeah, you put your money in the bank, you're just like, God, I've taken care of my own money. Just don't get involved and mess it all up. That's what it basically is. I've got a bank account, I've got a savings account. As long as there's no act of God, I'm going to be fine. Why are you getting yourself involved, God? Why involve yourself and mess me up and hurt my money, hurt everything that I have? Number four. Number five. A korban todah is a type of shlamin, but it's different. A shlamin can be eaten for 2 days and one night. A todah, Thanksgiving offering, can only be eaten for 1 day and one night. That's all it can do. 1 day and one night. That's when a korban todah can be eaten. You can't leave anything over till morning. What happens if you leave it over till morning? Then you have to burn it. The halacha is you got to burn it. That's what ends up happening. It shows me that it's a lack of bitachon on my part. If I leave something over until morning, I don't believe that God will give me anything tomorrow. There are certain people, Reb Chaim Brisker was one of them, who would never leave money in his house overnight. If he had money in his pocket, he would give it out to poor people. He never had a cent for the next day. The next day, whatever money he needed, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would make sure that he had. But he never had a cent to leave over the next day. Now that's not Moshe Polson's rule. You don't have to go ahead and do it. You don't have to worry about that. Granted, we have savings accounts. But the question is why? Why do I have to constantly daven and not have my own savings account? Why is that a lack of bitachon? Number five, how much can I trust God? How much am I supposed to trust Him that I'm supposed to just give everything to Him? The five mo'adim are supposed to directly answer these problems. Okay? But here it is. The first thing is Pesach. There was a geula, and there will be another geula. At that time, only good things will happen to good people forever. When we're in gullus, when we're not yet in our state of perfection, bad things are going to happen to the good people. That's how you know we're in gullus. That's how you know we're in exile. The only way for it to be good things happening to good people is if the full geula happened. If the full redemption is there, and that's what Pesach is all about. Pesach is, don't worry. It will happen again. There will be another Kriya Samson. There will be other Makos. We are going to go into Eretz Yisrael again. It's all going to be ours without any problems from anybody else around us. Everything's going to be all good, and good things will happen to good people. Just got to wait for it. It'll happen soon. That's number one. Number two is Shavuos. What happened at Matan Torah? Anybody who had a blemish, anybody who had a mum, even if they were missing arms, they were no longer blemished. Everything grew back. Everything was fine. You were blind. You were able to see at Matan Torah. Everything was perfectly fine then. So when you ask, why does the Kadosh Baruch Hu give us inherent problems? When Mashiach comes, you'll see that everybody will be equal. But that's not our world. Our world is to be different. Our world is not for everyone to be the same, to be just carbon copies of a perfect person. That's not our world. The world of Olam Hazeh is for everybody to perfect themselves with their own problems. And when you work on yourself and you do something for yourself, then all of a sudden you've made your life worth living. If you don't work on yourself, then it's not a life. It's just giving into your tithes all day long. It's to work on it to make it a milah. An inherent problem can be a milah, not a chisaron. The third is Rosh Hashanah. The shofar wakes you up. You know, every morning, I said that there's a guy in the Beis Medrash who after every yom, after they do the yom, immediately he just goes, to every morning, every single morning, just does a little shofar blast. Does a little shofar blast to himself. The shofar wakes people up. Sometimes you don't heed a normal wake-up call. But by the ultimate geula, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings out the shofar of the aisle that was brought in the place of Yitzchak at the Akedah, when that shofar is used and the shofar blast goes out to everybody, that's a final wake-up call. So when you say to yourself, wait a second, can't God stop me from sinning before I do so? Yes, He could. No, He won't, because it's not the point of this world. Lasid Lavo, that's exactly what God's going to do. That's the point of Rosh Hashanah. Number four, Yom Kippur. If you act like a malach, you'll concentrate on the tov that God gives you, and you'll stop looking at the bad. Granted, there's one thing that goes wrong. Billions of things are going right. I've got everything else going for me, but one thing happens, and I lose one little thing, all of a sudden it looks like I lost the world. I'm making thousands and thousands of dollars, and you get a $50 parking ticket, and it's like, oh God, why do you do this to me? Don't look at just the one bad thing that happened. Look at the total picture, the great big picture, and you'll understand that a loss of money is nothing in the grand scheme of things. For us, it will all be malachim, and we'll be able to look at things with the proper outlook, that we'll be able to see these things and say a loss of money, when it comes to that minuscule amount, means nothing. Absolutely nothing, when God has given us all tovos, 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 one after the other. And fifth, how much can I trust God? Sukkos is all about sitting in the sukkah, in the hekif, and where HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects us with an or makah, with a light that surrounds us at all times, where no one will harm us. And we can truly believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us and trusting us. Lasid level will be sitting there with a constant feeling of where God is hovering over us at all times. We'll be able to see the malachim that are with us every day of our lives. The malachim that surround us, that go with us wherever we go. Wherever we go, those malachim will see them with our very own eyes. Then you don't have a problem with these types of things. So granted, right now in this world, these questions are huge questions. These are great, great questions. But they're not to be answered now. If they were answered, this wouldn't be a true Olam Hazeh. It would be Olam Haba. It would be a different world altogether, and it just wouldn't be as cool. It wouldn't be a world where you'd get schar for it. It wouldn't be a world where you'd actually feel good when you do something right. It would be a world where right is just automatic. That's not what a Kaddish Baruch wants in this world. That's the idea of Anna. So a proper summary is this. Chinuch is to show the love, not the force. That's number one. Number two, wrong chinuch leads to a makalo, leads to a bad type of ashkafa where the makalo can come out. How they knew he was a Ben Ish Mitzri, the Chassam Sofer from the Chazaka plus the Eid Echad, that's how they knew who he was. Number five, there are five huge lessons, number four I should say, five huge lessons from the five holidays, that each holiday is supposed to teach us this concept of something that will happen on a level that will change us and change our outlook on life so that it's not a bad thing. We'll stop with that. Have a good Shabbos, everybody.